Hey everyone, you're listening to episode number 6 of the Elysium Project podcast. I'm your host, Brian Johnson. This podcast was recorded July 23rd, 2018. Thanks so much for listening to these early episodes. As I mentioned last time, this is my first endeavor doing a podcast, so bear with me as I'm learning as I go. Each one will continually improve. Our Patreon site is now fully set up with a few articles posted for subscribers only. If you haven't heard of Patreon yet, it's a crowdfunding platform for episodic content creators such as podcast and YouTube personalities. For $4 a month, you can get access to our exclusive insider content as well as a book I'm currently working on and plan to release through Patreon in the fall. If $4 is too much, you can pledge as little as $1 and cancel at any time. In doing so, you help keep this show and vision alive, as well as support our continued plans to become a leading media company documenting what seems to be a global awakening in consciousness. You can find us on Patreon at www.patreon.com. That's patreon.com/Elysium Project Podcast. Today, I'm joined in studio with my good friend, Matt McAdam. Matt and myself have been paying pretty close attention to the political climate over the last few years. In that time, we've noticed the left becoming less and less liberal and more authoritarian as cultural Marxism and postmodern ideas have infiltrated college campuses. In this episode, we're going to ask the question, is the left still liberal? Matt, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Brian. Good to be here.
Yeah. How are you doing?
Fantabulous.
Awesome.
Ready to go here.
Yeah, so I guess we started talking about this a couple years ago, probably around or before the time that Trump
the
took
election
office.
Was happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, sort of in the ramp up during the election period, right?
Mm-hmm.
Started to notice some stuff.
Well, I definitely started to take notice of things, not only on the right, but especially on the left, which is what we're talking about
exactly,
today.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so some of the things that I've been noticing over the past few years that really started raising alarms is just this shift from classical liberal ideas to more authoritarian, almost communist-like class-based
social
ideas
panic.
Of class-based guilt.
Yeah.
So to open the show, I wanted to kind of share with the listeners classical liberalism, what that is. And that's been based around the ideas of, as you know, John Locke, John Stuart Mill, his writing of On Liberty, in which he really laid out the ideas of liberalism being based on liberty, civil liberties, and freedom of speech.
Which is really important, yeah.
Yeah, a big part of it. And
that's what the left seems to be threatening these days, right? They're going with, like, you need to sort of, like, listen to how we've interpreted the world rather than, you know, allowing everyone to have a voice, which is
It's kind of
classical,
like,
liberal.
It's kind of like make up your own mind, but you must arrive at this conclusion type of thing, right?
Take whatever path you want, but this is the answer.
Yes, yes. And if you don't agree with that, then they start labeling you all these different words like Islamophobe or whatever.
Nazis,
simply for
one.
Disagreeing with, for example, I mean, Sam Harris was one of the first people that I started to take notice of. He was speaking out, very rightfully so, on criticisms of Islam.
Definitely.
You know, some of the violence and the misogyny, and there's a lot of problems with certain aspects of the Islam religion.
With every religion, which is what he's criticizing, but he got a lot of blowback for the Islam criticism.
Yeah.
I mean, I first came across him when he was criticizing Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I actually have a quote here from him.
Nice.
He said, the freedom to poke fun at Mormonism is guaranteed not by the First Amendment, but by the fact that Mormons do not dispatch assassins to silence their critics or summon murderous hordes in response to satire. And it just kind of brings me back to the Charlie Hebdo incident.
Right.
So
they're just drawing some pictures.
You know, it's not, as we're saying, it's not just criticizing that. Of course, there's these radical elements of Islam that he and others are criticizing, but in his criticisms, he also criticized, as you said, Christianity, Mormonism, all different aspects of many different religions, and that is freedom of thought, which is expressed through freedom of speech.
Yeah, being a classical liberal.
Yeah, and his book, I believe, was something, what was it, Waking Up with Sam Harris?
That's his podcast.
Okay. Well, I think he also has a book titled that, I believe.
Might be.
And he sort of speaks about kind of what I want to talk about today, which is the idea of, yeah, having that spiritual connection without the necessity of having a religion.
Right, and he's big on that.
Right.
Yeah, this is sort of where he and, like, Jordan Peterson have had a very famous clash, another classical mm-hmm. liberal. Mm-hmm. So, like, they had two famous talks. I think they're booked to do a third. Mm-hmm. And the first one really went sputtered up. And
for anyone who's listening who hasn't heard of Jordan Peterson yet, although he's pretty famous at this point, let's go over his story, because he has a really interesting story, which is why what's kind of shot him into the public spectacle right now.
Well, he's sort of ridden the wave of this entire controversy. He spoke up early in Canada, where we had Bill C-16 be proposed, and it referenced the Ontario standards for what sexual orientation was and sexual identity and stuff like that.
It added that, yeah, to the criminal code.
It was referring to that piece of legislature for the new bill as a reference. And first of all, it's compelled speech. So, I mean, a classical liberal like Jordan Peterson's definitely against that. He spent a lot of his years studying, looking into socialism, both like fascism and communism. Just like he wants to avoid that in future societies. So mm-hmm. He went in hard and studying all that, and he put some of that into his first book. But his more current efforts have been in the direction of the controversy surrounding the left not being liberal, as we suggested. It's Bill C-16 was the first time he showed up.
And the reason he is speaking out on this, just to let listeners know, is because it's putting compelled speech into law, meaning you must address a person with these certain pronouns, and there's things like Z, Zer, they for gender neutral people. You must address people by these or it can be deemed a criminal offense. And what he's raising his eyebrows on is the fact that it's being put into law, not exactly the idea that you have to, that these are maybe beneficial terms to introduce to society, which is debatable, but that's for another podcast. So what he's talking about is putting this into law, and I've also really been researching the work of Jordan Peterson over the last few years, just to give listeners another example of the sort of class-based guilt that he's referring to that can be dangerous with these ideologies. And I'm going to mess this up. I'm not going to get it perfect because I didn't pre-plan this, but in the Soviet Union, when the communists took over,
right,
there were these successful, I believe they were farmers called the kulaks, and there was, you know, millions of them. They were very successful pre-communist Soviet Union. And once the Communist Party took hold, they decided that entire class, this is what class-based guilt is, right? All of those people were in the bad because they were taking up prior to...
They were successful.
Exactly.
They had money.
They were the bourgeoisie.
They had earned their way into riches, but were painted as these demons anyways.
Yeah. And due to that class-based guilt, I mean, they were sent off into labor camps and...
all their property seized, redistributed.
Mm-hmm. Jordan Peterson often references a book, The Gulag Archipelago, I believe, or Archipelago.
Yeah, Gulag Archipelago.
Yes, and it's, I've read parts of it. It's a massive book. But anyways, it's just kind of, it really puts into reference why communism specifically
work.
Is not a good idea.
Yeah.
And I guess Jordan Peterson's whole argument and the shtick of it is that we should not be revisiting these ideas when we have like 200 million or so dead bodies to show that
It doesn't work.
That it doesn't work, yeah.
And not just there, like it didn't work in Maoist China. Like it hasn't worked anywhere.
Mm.
And that. So he's ridden the wave for having that stance as well. He has a number of criticisms. He's apparently an enemy of feminism as well. He very famously had a...
These are accusations.
These are accusations. Right. They're definitely not true. If you want an opinion of Jordan Peterson, he has hundreds of hours of YouTube videos of him giving speeches. So just go look at any of those, make your own opinion. It speaks for itself, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
But he had a very public debate in on the BBC against Kathy Newman as like a sort of feminist trying to go at him for being anti-feminist. And, you know, it really played out to his advantage. A lot of people took notice of him at that point. He was also trying to promote his book at the time, and that's, I think, the best-selling book in North America.
Yeah, it became a huge book. That's like I say, I said at the beginning of the show, he's just become a superstar. I mean, when I started following him, obviously because, you know, I believe that he is on a side of an argument or whatever that's correct. So that's why I kind of I got into what he was saying early on. And I was like, yes, this guy is onto something.
One of the most interesting things about him is his spiritual ideas. I mean, he references the great arc stories of the Bible and speaks about them in profound ways that really, like, as a spiritual person, speak to me a lot stronger than like some of his logical arguments as well. So, I mean, to have an intellectual talk about his relationship with God and like how to like wrestle with that in a psychological way is, oh, that is some of the most fascinating stuff that he gets into. One of the other reasons Sam Harris is fascinating.
I was just going to say, it's really interesting because they're both into that. So we'll get into
that
more.
They're kind of on opposite sides, which is great. You know, it's great to hear him go back and forth.
Yeah, we'll kind of touch on that at the end of the show, I think. I wanted to share to listeners just a little story of the history of this sort of left ideology that's taken hold.
Cultural Marxism.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm just going to share that, and then we'll get into you telling me, because I haven't been paying as much attention as you have at what's going on lately. So you're going to kind of fill me in on some of the dirty details of what the left is up to these days.
Nothing too inspiring, unfortunately. I worry that we're in for another Trump win, but you know, hey, part of still time to turn it around.
Yeah, I mean, part of his rise was certainly due to what we're talking about today.
Absolutely,
a reaction to that. It's really funny because that's just the way the human brain works. But I see so many people online now. You know, they get what we call the red pill, sort of waking up to all this, and then they immediately jump into some sort of conservative camp. And it's like, well, wait a second, is that really the right answer? If you did, you know, because they're quite differing ideologies. And I would say both of you and I. Like I've never voted conservative in my life. There, now the listeners know, but
I think I have for sure.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure the first time Harper got in, I voted for him. I feel bad about it now, but you know,
yeah.
Ray is Alberta. What do you want me to do? Seemed like a good idea.
But in generally speaking, I would say our ideas have in the past been more on the left side of things. So
I try to stay on the side of renegades, you know, like whatever people don't want to do, I'm kind of interested in stuff like that.
Yeah,
whatever that happens to be.
Yeah,
so I mean, to find myself on the left, you know, sort of as a contrarian, it's a natural spot for me, right? Like I don't like what everyone's doing. But
so this whole idea of cultural Marxism on the left, it's kind of a conspiracy, but I mean, it's based on facts and it makes a lot of sense to me, so I'm gonna share about it today. It started out after World War One, essentially, when the socialists and communists of the world failed in succeeding with a socialist revolution. They were questioning, why did the proletariat not rise up and create that, what they called the dictatorship of the proletariat? It was about classical Marxism, was about the
haves and the have-nots.
The haves and the have-nots, which were the proletariat and the bourgeoisie. And they said, why didn't that happen? We thought that we were so sure that that was going to happen after World War One, that the world would shift into this socialist government, that that would succeed, that revolution all around the world. So they said, why did that not happen? And there was a group of thinkers in Germany, like Herbert Marcuse, Theodor Adorno, a number of them, very intelligent thinkers, and they were Marxists, but they're part of this school of thought out there, which is called Frankfurt School. And essentially they shifted the idea that there was the haves and the have-nots. Well, there still was, but not the bourgeoisie and the proletariat. It wasn't classical Marxism anymore. It became about the oppressor and the oppressed.
Which is similar, but a slightly different shade of the same thing, right?
Yes.
So it kept momentum for them, but they were able to shift direction so that they could keep going forward on an idea that obviously it ran into a wall.
Yeah, and this is called cultural Marxism, which also influenced these postmodern thinkers that Jordan Peterson is quite often referencing. And what it is the oppressor and the oppressed. So it's putting people into
categories, groups,
which again is a class, this whole idea of class-based guilt. And it takes everyone and says, okay, the reason that if there's a patriarchy, if there's the men are oppressing the women, then all males are part of the oppressor class.
Yes.
And it also creates this victim culture. Yeah. And that
which seems, isn't a healthy mindset, by the way. It usually doesn't help you develop as a person acting like a victim all the time.
Mm-hmm. And that is really the origin of where this came from, because in World War II, when the Nazis took control of Germany, they kicked all these, because these were Jewish thinkers, I believe, is the reason they were kicked out. Yeah. But anyways, they were sent to, I think it was Columbia University, and these ideas just started to infiltrate Western thinking. And it was critical theory, so it was critical of Western culture, and it appealed to the youth at that time. They're saying,
well, the rebellious youth,
yes,
right? I mean,
yes. And there was another one of them. His name was, I believe, Antonio Gramsci. And he was just another one of these cultural Marxist thinkers.
Great minds of the time.
He wrote, in reference to the fact that Marxism did not succeed in classical terms, he referenced that this will only succeed after a long march through the institutions. That was his quote, and meaning that we need to get this into the universities and
start
indoctrinate
kids at a young age.
Indoctrinate our children. And this,
while they're still impressionable, coming out of high school.
This is what's happening right now in the universities, and this is what I'm going to get you to talk about and share more about. Like, there's now these, there's microaggressions,
safe spaces.
Yeah, so let's get into the what's going on here.
Yeah, because it's all a little bizarre. I mean, that basically you're trying to wrap the world in bubble wrap. It seems to be the solution. It's pretty hilarious. The victim mentality has just really pushed the narrative in a lot of ways. Whoever can claim the most oppression wins. And it doesn't work because they go after themselves too, right? I mean, they cleanse themselves. You can see them attacking some of their own people all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean,
it's this groupthink idea, as we're talking about, where you have to think, you have to come to this conclusion, and if you don't, then you're cast out.
Yeah, but even if you've ever in your history done anything that's in opposition to this, which is almost impossible to avoid, you can be crucified for it, you know? I mean, they take no prisoners. Everyone's up for grabs, right? I mean, they're criticizing Denzel Washington for telling ladies they look nice when they have professional hairdressers and people dressing them for looking nice on TV, you know? Like, it's a weird situation. Like, he's this classical figure that everyone's like, oh, he's like the perfect man. And then all of a sudden, these people just turn on him and try to go after him just so that they can say that they took the man down that day, you know? Mm-hmm.
And just to clarify, who are they? Because we don't want to, you know, we're kind of creating a group here ourselves, but what are we?
Certainly. Well, it's a large minority. It's a group of like journalists and activists and writers that are product of the university institutions of the day, right?
I mean, postmodern left.
Exactly. The problem is that not only their teachers are postmodernists, but I mean the administration has been infected with this left-leaning thought too. So I mean, if something goes wrong, they fall on the side of, oh well, this liberal left idea, or illiberal left, I should say.
What about
applied that mentality? A great situation shown through exactly what Jordan Peterson was talking about happened in Canada here at Wilfrid Laurier. Yeah. We had Lindsay Shepherd have an anonymous complaint filed against her in her class. She was a teacher's assistant. Showed a impartial clip of Jordan Peterson debating the Bill C-16 issue that he first became popular for. And apparently this anonymous complaint was saying that this hurt, like, people in the classroom to hear these opinions, you know, like didn't give like trigger warnings or something in the classroom, or they pulled her into this tribunal with two teachers and some member of whatever council they have in Ontario for such events as this that was created. They dressed her down for the whole situation. She was smart enough to record it. And she released that recording, and it sounds really bad. I suggest anyone look this up. Make your own opinion about it.
One of the things the administration said when they brought Lindsay in, I believe, was this is comparable to playing a neutral speech by Hitler to the class, like presenting a speech by Hitler and presenting it as neutral rather than labeling it for what it is. So they're saying that Jordan Peterson, a University of Toronto professor, is
indentured.
Exactly.
Indentured university professor. They're saying they're equivocating him with Hitler, which is very big stretch. I mean, one's a monster who is a political figure, the other's a university teacher who happens to be in the middle of this controversy. That he didn't really seek this popularity either. I mean, it was largely thrust upon him because he wouldn't back down from his controversial position. And then he found a whole bunch of other classical liberals that would stand up for his positions, and very well-known ones, you know, like, again, Sam Harris has been in direct debates with him.
Before we go on to that, to go back to the Lindsay Shepherd situation, I'm pretty sure as well, if I might be mistaken on this, there's a chance I'm mistaken, but I think that that anonymous complaint, that was not from a student. That was
It was later found in a inquiry into the whole thing, an impartial inquiry, that there was never a complaint filed. There was no evidence of any complaint ever filed. If one was filed, then the teachers deleted it or something like that. There was never any evidence.
It's crazy. This is the craziness that we're talking about today. You have an anonymous complaint being filed that apparently comes from a student about a teacher, a teaching assistant showing a Canadian professor's talk neutrally, which was on a Canadian television station, showing that in class, and then the complaint saying, no, this is offensive material, this is not suitable for students who are all over at the age of 18, and that you come into this tribunal where you have, it's like three teachers grilling this one girl. And it turns out,
if you listen to it, she cries, like, cause they're going at her and accusing her of, like, you know, human rights violations. Right. I mean, she's,
I remember. And she, I believe she's like, she's tearing up. She's like, well, I don't think I'm a bad person or whatever. And they're saying, I remember one of the things I think his professor Ram Buchanan or something. He was like, do you see how this was wrong? And
no, she says no. Right. Yeah. Like, and I can't blame her for that. Right. It's a completely insane situation, but I mean, we've seen situations popping up like this. Like, the evidence turns very clear in a lot of these situations. I mean, we have plenty of protests that people behave badly at, let's say. It's supposedly on the left, which is supposed to be all like peace and harmony, freedom. Like, that was always my vision of the left, you know, the classical liberal, you know, that was always the way of it. But in these places where that idea was born, like Berkeley, that's one of the places where they've been the most oppressive, this new left. They've been trying to keep free speech rallies from from being held. They've had Antifa, a ally of this new left, show up. You know, they're all socialists. They bring weapons. They cover their faces.
Yeah, they wear all black.
Even Antifa has their own sects within it. One of them, BAM, by any means necessary.
Okay.
Yeah, it's they were a violent sect, you could say. Most members, I say most members, the leader and another member for certain have been charged, and I believe one's certainly convicted. And Yvette Falarca is the leader, to my knowledge, or was at the time of these protests. And she's on all kinds of video, like punching people and like being abusive, which as a left person, you wouldn't think that would be the road she'd take. But, you know, on video doing these things, she's sentenced to felony charges, including assault and rioting through all this, just because so convinced that their side is right, they're becoming violent, right? And this is one of the real worries about all of this.
Exactly, and that's what we're talking about today, is that this is not a liberal quality, this authoritarian way of thinking of you must think this way or you're cast out and we'll use violence. And it's very interesting because as far as I'm concerned, I don't follow it as much as I used to, but the mainstream media was very allied with the left in that they were going out of their way to report stories about Trump supporters misbehaving, let's say, or people on the right just making this big boogeyman out of the right. And I'm not saying I agree with Trump on anything. I don't think he's a very good president, but I'm saying they very much allied with the left. And
they pushed the anti-right narrative, and they didn't. This is the one thing that the left is really bad at, is they don't call out their own. People behave they misbehave on the left, and they absolutely lose track. They go off the rails. It's not
it's just that the media hasn't. I don't know if they still aren't, but when I was following it, they weren't really covering the Antifa riots, which were crazy. You had like people. I mean, what was there? Some professor that
there was a bike lock basher.
Right.
Yeah. Eric Clanton. He got doxxed by 4chan. Actually, they figured out his face behind the mask just from different videos and pictures from those events.
Yeah.
They just referenced all that, and
he hit some girl over the head with a bike lock, and it's on video, right?
He's just it was a guy. Okay. That's the famous bike lock smash. He caught him right on the head. That guy needed stitches. He was concussed, I believe. He's hit a couple people, but the one guy in the red shirt's the famous clip that made the news, to my knowledge. And so he was sentenced for assault with a deadly weapon, I think. Because the bike locks really friggin' weighted, and it was in a sock or something like that. Like, it was absolutely crazy. The guy's a humanity professor of some kind.
Right, so that was
you can see that mental disconnect again, right? Like, he's supposed to be teaching you to be a good person or whatever. And there he goes, smashing people with bike locks.
I've been watching a lot of these protests over the last few years. The Berkeley, they call them the Battle of Berkeleys, and I mean they had
a number of them.
They also, the speakers that they're not permitting to speak, like Ben Shapiro, who, for those who don't listen, he's a right wing Jewish political commentator, and he was speaking. I mean, he has no radical views whatsoever. He's very much a constitutional conservative.
Well, I mean, he's like pro-abortion and stuff like that, or he's anti-abortion and stuff like that. So, I mean, depending on your point of view, some of his views are controversial for sure. But, I mean, he's not unreasonable.
Fair enough.
You can have a conversation with him.
Mm-hmm. But you have Antifa showing up and they're, you know, condemning it as a Nazi event or whatever. A Jewish Nazi. Like, it's unbelievable.
It doesn't make any sense in that regard. Milo Yiannopoulos was another one that they would protest against. He's a gay dude with like frequent. I think it's one black boyfriend, but like he's had a number of black men in his life that he dates. He's not a Nazi. Clearly. I mean, he's gay and into black dudes. Like, but he says very controversial things, some hateful things, and, you know, probably a bunch of stuff you shouldn't say.
Yeah, he's quite a controversial one, for sure.
I can see why you'd protest that guy. But, I mean, like, they knocked over a light stand and burnt it at one of those protests, and then, like, damaged the student building that they were going to have the protest in. Like, the things just got way out of control by the left. That's supposed to be peace, love, and all that good stuff. It's a complete detachment from classical liberalism.
Mm-hmm. No, it's definitely something else. What's going on here? Like, what do you think is going on?
Well, I mean, basically, we're trying to make sure we take care of each other, right? And there's just a large part of the population doesn't believe we're doing that enough. I just think they're being unreasonable, you know? If you look at a lot of the statistics, like terrible crimes, like horrible crimes, like the rate of those are dropping. Like, they're getting less and less all the time. They're getting more reported because the news is trying to keep us in a panic state so that we don't think about what's really going on in the system. but like, it's just getting away from us, you know? Like,
yeah, I agree with you. I think what's happening is these are born out of compassionate ideas, but there's
so it's hard
people.
To hate.
Mm-hmm. However, what's happening is these people are, what I think is happening, I'm going to break it down since this show is about spirituality and stuff.
All
Here's
right.
what I think is happening. There's this real strong identification with the mind and body in these people, because most of these people on the left are usually atheists, or they don't have
agnostic.
Any sort of spiritual thing. And I'm not saying that's wrong at all. If that works for you, that's fine. But what they're doing is because they're so attached to their thoughts and
their self-identity.
And their self-identity that when anyone, there's this old saying, sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me.
Right.
They've lost sight of that. These people, this victim crybaby culture, whatever you want to call it, they're saying, you must treat me this way. And if you don't, that's oppression.
Right.
You know?
But they sort of feel entitled to a lot of stuff.
And then they're trying to get create this political left that's going to enforce these rules, which is what happened in Canada with Bill C-16 and what is happening in the college campuses. And I think that people like Sam Harris and Jordan Peterson are very rightfully so raising eyebrows at this and speaking out about this. And I think that
having a necessary conversation about something that's definitely a major challenge for society today.
You mentioned at the beginning, they both kind of have this deeper message of spirituality too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Jordan Peterson's big thing is, like, you know, clean your room, take care of yourself. And then slowly that builds out, right? Once you take care of yourself, you take care of your close family. Once you take care of your close family, you take care of your extended family, and then your friends, and then community, city. And it just gets larger and larger as you become more competent, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, his thing is definitely pushing competence.
So that's a really good point. I never really thought of it that way, but I think that the message, there's two different ways of looking at things, and what the left is doing here, these people on the left, is they're asking other people to change how they're treating them, and that's not going to work. That doesn't work.
People want to see you trying. Like, you're more likely to get help if you try a little bit. Like, if you just sit on the side of the road when your car breaks down, do people stop? Not so often. But if you get out and you're trying to do it yourself and you're having trouble, more people will stop and try to help you out, you know? Like, people see that you're trying to help yourself, and they get in there, you know? Like,
and I would say the message on the other side then is, no, you help yourself first and then go out there and help the world. And I think that's a large part of what Jordan Peterson is teaching and why he's resonating with so many,
and why his book is like the best selling,
because he's saying take responsibility for your life. And when you do that, I can speak personally for this, and anyone can listen to episode one of my podcast. The moment you start to take control of your life, you say, no, I am responsible for my reality. What these people say of me is not, does, should not affect me. And the more you do that, then that's
empowering.
Exactly.
And then it gives you, when you are empowered, you have more control, make the dictates of your life, and things just like click into place, you know? Like, one of the things that that's hurting the left is not having that spiritual connection. Like you said, if that works for you, that's okay. Mm-hmm. And you know, if it is working for you, you know, you can stick with that for a while, but I feel like you've got to come back to spirituality at some point, because it's just to believe in something greater than ourselves is the glue that holds humanity together, and humanity doing things together is how we've always done things the best, right? I mean, we've progressed because we work together and do amazing things that couldn't be accomplished on our own, right? So that's how it's got to go.
Perfect. You said it. Thanks for coming on the show, Matt.
Thanks for having me, Brian.